NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. If approved, applications are typically funded the next business day or sooner. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Now's the time to save 30% on wedding jewelry. Only on BlueNile.com. Make sure your wedding ring is the one with your pick of diamond and lab-grown diamond bands, all hand-finished and graded for excellence. Or surprise her with something blue she'll love for life, like a stunning pair of sapphire earrings. Blue Nile's jewelry experts are available 24/7 to help, from fit questions to style advice. Right now, get up to 30% off at BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the only podcast that is officially extending an invitation to Wyatt Johnston. Come live with Stargazing, buddy. We know you need a new spot. You're welcome here. We'd be happy to have you. Mark, not the podcast we wanted to have quite this early in the playoffs, but good to see you nonetheless.
I'm sad.
Why are you sad, he says?
I'm sad because the Stars are no longer playing hockey. I'm sad because it looks like Joe Pavelski is going to move to Wisconsin and live a wonderful family life. That's a selfish reason for being sad.
Yeah, how dare he? we hear all this BS about him being a good leader, right? And no, it's a wonderful thing.
He's earned it, and I'm not going to take back any of the things that I said about his game slowing down. I think he probably felt that more urgently than anybody else. But good on him. Great career. Great guy. Great leader. Glad he was a Dallas Star.
Yeah, glad he was. And I it's funny too, thinking back to the 3-year deal, I remember being okay with it because my perspective was, well, they're looking to get one or two good years out of him and then either dump him in the expansion draft or buy him out. And that's just fine by me. And to go from there to where we are now and what he's meant to this team, both on and off the ice, sometimes, you know, we follow laundry, right? And other times sports can give us some really cool moments and some really cool memories. And I like to think that when you look at his overall trajectory as a Dallas Star, Joe Pavelski's is going to be one of the cooler, kind of more fun, fonder memories I have of my Stars fandom, just what he has done in the time he was here.
Well, I think it's a reminder that you can't make snap judgments, because you know, it's so easy to forget that first regular season that Pavelski had with the Stars was kind of a down season for him.
Oh, I remember making he was washed jokes. You're absolutely right.
And then the playoffs hit, and all of a sudden Pavelski was just on fire and continued that way for the rest of the contract and beyond. So yeah. You know, don't just say, you know, you can't give up on somebody who comes in who has an established record, because they sometimes it takes a while to work things out. And Pavelski is Exhibit A.
And I think as well, right, the critical thing to me about Joe Pavelski, and this is the benefit of hindsight, but he checked two boxes. Not only did he have a history of performance, right, not only was he an elite hockey player, but think about literally every fawning anecdote you've ever heard about Joe Pavelski. It almost always revolves around him getting to work early, him doing extra practice, him being the first guy on, last guy off. There was always talk about his work ethic. And to your point, right, when you take an elite athlete and you give that elite athlete an elite work ethic, sure, was it a slam dunk that he was going to work through the, you know, location change and adapt to being a Dallas Star? No, it wasn't. But his odds were a lot higher because of not just who he was as a player, sorry, not just what he had as a player, like innately, but because of what he put into his game and the way he crafted it. And like I said, in hindsight, knowing what I know now and what we know now about him as a player and the work that he put into it, in hindsight, he is absolutely the guy that was going to work his way through an early transition hiccup and turn into just an all-timer as far as the franchise is concerned.
Well, and again, go back to what was going on, because Pavelski was still doing his thing, but it took until late winter, early spring for John Klingberg to start joining him with those early times.
Yeah.
And I think there's probably a connection there where you had a guy who can put up an incredibly tippable shot from the point with a guy with those great hands. And that, I think, is maybe what started to get things clicking. And then it just exploded. You also throw in the leadership. Pavelski took on a role that he probably didn't get in front credit for, but he brought, I've seen stuff about what he's done for Jamie Benn as a leader. And Benn has been a great leader, but a certain type of leader that doesn't necessarily pull everybody into the fray. And Pavelski was kind of the dad behind that and could be a public face within the team. Yeah. And I think that was really useful.
He was, and he's also the guy, like, it's one thing to have a work ethic, but when your best players are your hardest working players, it's really difficult for the rest of the roster to be passengers. So I think that you're right. Buckle up, Stars Nation, right? We are about to get a summer plus full of articles talking about how great he was for this franchise. And honestly, he's going to deserve every word, every sentence, every syllable, no matter how, you know, it. And I think you mentioned it earlier, right? It's a good reminder that in sports, things almost never end well, and that's okay, right? That's the contract that doesn't take away any of the, you know, I think Castillo's had some great points about his usage, and you know, there's some stuff. It doesn't take away any of the truth about how it ended. But this is, you know, now we get to transition a little bit and start talking about the totality of his career. And we can focus more on that. And I think it's going to be a really fun and fulfilling exercise to really dig into what he's done and who he's been.
Yeah. And he overperformed, because I think you were right. The original contract, all of these, you know, plus 35 contracts that you're talking about are guys where you kind of are buying the first part of that contract, where you're going to get them at on the tail end of their prime, and you're just recognizing that you're going to have to go through the back end of that contract and live with it.
One of Nil's very early coups as a general manager is getting that contract done without trade protection.
Yeah, and Nil's done this. You know, Jason Spezza was the same way.
Yep.
You know, Radulov was the same way. You kind of have, you know, the model that the Stars have includes having some veteran contracts that are maybe a little past their prime, or maybe seriously past their prime, but still has a place and a role within the team that allows them to be successful. And that's one of the reasons maybe why you feel a little better about, you know, Jamie Benn, why you feel a little better about Tyler Seguin, who are still putting up numbers in a different role. And yeah, you can say they're overpaid, but were they overpaid for the entire contract? And I would argue probably not.
Well, and also for guys that are long-term, it's not just where they overpaid for the entire contract, it's where they overpaid for the entire tenure of their career. Because remember, correct, right, sports is geared to screw you early, right? That when Jamie Benn was winning an Art Ross trophy, right? When Tyler Seguin was, you know, when he and Jamie Benn were, you know, I think at one point they were the highest or the second highest scoring duo in the NHL, right? When all of that was happening, Tyler Seguin was making, what, $5.5 million, something like that. So I think you just have, oftentimes we conflate the impact on the cap with the dollar hit, right? A bad contract is a bad contract because it ties your hands. Well, you know, that's not been the case with Jamie Benn or Tyler Seguin. So they've, if not this season, I feel they've earned every penny they're getting over the course of their Stars career. But it's always a source of good commentary. And Mark, BetOnline is your number one source for the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Use promo code BLEAVE, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. The game starts here. And Mark, unfortunately for the Stars, the game stops in Edmonton in game six with a 2-1 loss. And it's a tough pill to swallow. I want to start with a take of my own. I want to lay it on you. I want to get your reaction as we get into talking about how this final series went. And by the way, we're going to talk about the final series. We're going to talk about the rest of the offseason a little bit. We're going to cover a couple of things as we gear up towards the summer. But Mark, here is my hot take. Dallas got exactly the series that they needed to get from the Edmonton Oilers in terms of their performance, in terms of how the games developed. Everything that happened, if you were the Stars and you told Pete DeBoer the scores and the performance and what was going to happen, if you walked Pete DeBoer through it at the start of the series, I think he would have said, yes, I will take that. And the true tragedy of the Western Conference Final is that they got the series that they needed to get out of Edmonton, and they couldn't take advantage of it. They couldn't get the job done.
Okay, and you're going to have to expand on that a little bit more for me. How did they not get the job done? One, what in particular? Let's get down to some specifics.
Yeah, so for me, they didn't get the job done. The biggest glaring is the power play and their vaunted, much ballyhooed depth scoring. And at the end of the day, they lost this series because they couldn't capitalize on the offensive opportunities that they were given.
Let me give you my hot take.
Yeah, load it up.
Let's take a look at the playoffs as a whole. When we started all of this, you know, early April, what we were looking at was a series that started in Vegas. And we all recognized that Vegas was going to be a really tough out for the Stars. It was going to be a draining series. Early on in that series, we found out that the Stars were pretty much going to be rolling 5D. And that meant some pretty heavy minutes on guys who would be expected to be at their best against some of the best players in the league. Colorado, next round, maybe a slightly different challenge, not as heavy, but especially at the top end on defense, there was pressure put on Haskinen. There was pressure put on Tanev, Lindell. Not necessarily exposed that much. This is why the Stars won that series. They were able to take it. But again, you're talking about 5D who are facing some extremely good players. And then you hit Edmonton, and the strength that you're talking about, this Stars depth, and yeah, we can talk special teams, because the special teams was certainly one of the things that pushed Edmonton over the top. But what you had was some top-end talent. And I would argue that this is exactly what you could expect, that the guys who needed to shut down that top end talent, they were wiped out. And they just didn't have what it took to be as competitive as they needed to be to stop McDavid. And that killed them. And I don't know how you change that other than get to play the Kings and the Canucks up front instead of the Golden Knights and the Avalanche.
I mean, I think that I don't disagree. And I think that playing with six defensemen instead of five would make a difference, and not having Tanev block the shot that he blocked. I don't know. The stat that I just keep coming back to, Mark, is I think that if you told me that in a six-game playoff series, and this is a testament to how good he is, if you told me that in a six-game playoff series you held Connor McDavid to 10 points, I would say Dallas probably wins that series, if that's the only data point that I have. I would say that if you told me that in a critical playoff game, Dallas gave up two goals, one of which was an absolute worldie from Connor McDavid, I'd say, well, that to me, the way that he's been playing this season, the way that he's played kind of historically, that to me is as close as you are ever going to get to shutting Connor McDavid down. So I actually think that defensively, the big guns showed up. Yeah, there were moments where, you know, like Miro probably doesn't necessarily want to watch the highlight of the first goal against in game six. That's not going to be in his personal wall of fame. But I would say that, again, if you look at the overall course of the series, I think they can hang their heads high, and I think that they can, you know, look at what they accomplished and be proud of it. I still, like I said, I just keep coming back to outside of game six against Colorado. Tell me a little bit about Matt Duchene's postseason, right?
No, like, I understood, but let me dive in a little bit more here.
Yeah, please.
The defense I thought was fine. What I think killed Dallas was the defenders being able to drive the offense moving forward, zone exits, being able to enter the offensive zone with possession. It was stuff like this, and the Stars' offense wasn't necessarily a matter of shooting the puck, you know, what you consider as traditional offensive moves. It was being able to establish that presence in the offensive zone. And part of Pete DeBoer's system is being able to have the defense contribute to and be active members in that offense. And this is where I think the defense being wiped out killed them, because they expended all their energy on defense. They had nothing left in order to contribute on the offensive end. And because the defense wasn't there to support, what you ended up with was a lot of dump and chase from the forward group, and without the back end support, and you ended up with a bunch of easy clears going the other way.
Yeah.
And I think that's what killed them. And so it's more of the offense contribution from the defense as opposed to the defensive contribution from the defense.
Yeah, I don't disagree with any of that. But, you know, at the same time, I just look at, there were some guys that, you know, even before he had to miss time because of injuries, right? This is not the postseason that we expected out of Hintz. You know, Mason Marchment, he missed a little time early, and he did have a goal in game six, but, you know, three goals out of the postseason for him. Pavelski had a single goal. And yeah, we lionized him rightfully so at the start of the cast for his overall contribution throughout his career as a Star. But this particular postseason was one to forget. You know, they got literally no goals out of Thomas Harley after getting, 16-15 over the course of the regular season. There's just too many guys. Just too many guys that couldn't. And yeah, I think, you know, I could definitely see that the energy that they expended defensively was a part of that. But again, this was supposed to be a four-line team, and this was supposed to be a team that could compensate for that effort expenditure by finding offense elsewhere. And, you know, I'm just kind of looking down the list, right? Like, Wyatt Johnston got a little bit quiet against Edmonton, but had a great postseason. I would argue, and he was quiet the last, I think, three games. You know, Jason Robertson, he ran out of gas towards the end. But I would argue that, you know, outside of the Edmonton series, he was fine this postseason. Then you got Ben and Sagan, and, you know, Stankoven, I guess, had 8 points. But, like, the list, looking at flipping over from the, you know, eight guys scored 20 goals in the regular season to what we saw in the postseason, it just felt like it wasn't there.
Yeah, but I think a lot of that goes away with your complaint about the power play.
Yep.
That's where you get a lot of your goals, regular season, postseason. You have to have a dependable power play, and that didn't happen. And so everything that you're looking at with the Stars was 5-on-5. And the depth was fine. Johnston led the team in goals. You had contributions up and down the lineup. It's still kind of a small sample size at 19 games, right?
Yep.
So, you know, I think if you expand that and extrapolate it out over a longer period of time, you're going to have other guys who hit a hot streak where it evens out. But those power play goals and not being able to put anything in the net off of that certainly killed the offensive.
And not only, it wasn't just that they didn't score. Like, you could argue that, what was it, game four against the Oilers, that the power play not only didn't get anything, it got outscored and cost them the game.
Yeah. And what did I say? It's like my nightmare scenario is Matthias Janmark doing something on a breakaway. Yeah. It killed.
And it was tough because, like, and this is what I keep coming back to. I think that the model for Dallas winning the series was to minimize the contributions of McDavid and beat everybody else. And I still feel like they got the first part of that job done as much as anybody can. And, you know, I think it was three power plays to two in game six. Like, they had the chances, I think. And I've seen in a couple of places some complaining about the officiating. I think it was mostly because we saw, Knobloch make a big deal of it early. I honestly have zero complaints with the way that the conference final was called. I think the refs did a fine job. I think that they missed some things and they let some things go and they called some stuff early, but they didn't do any better or worse. They did a perfectly fine NHL quality officiating job, and I didn't think that they played favorites. I think that it was fine. And like you said, it's Dallas's complaints are internal, not external. I don't think you can look at even Stuart Skinner playing out of his mind a little bit. To me, more had to do with Dallas's inability to get interior and to get to rebounds, right? You watched the saves that he made, and yeah, he was making the first save and then kind of hoping for the rest. And so I think you can even look at that, and you can't look at what Edmonton did and say, well, you know, Connor McDavid scored 20 points. What are we supposed to do about it? Right. You can really look at Edmonton and say they kind of played exactly like we thought that they might. Dallas should have, in my opinion, even standing at a 4-2 series loss, right? Even with the L hanging over us, I think Dallas should have expected to win this series the way that it developed, and it's disappointing they didn't.
Yeah, they had their opportunities. There's no doubt about it. I think the Oilers' defense got to look a lot better than it needed to, because the offense for the Stars was so stagnated.
They refused, and maybe it was the fatigue thing you're talking about. But you had, I think, Mark, the perfect point. Dallas at times seemed to refuse to challenge the Oilers at the blue line.
Yep. And the thing is, you know, some of it is just dumping the puck in is not it's a strategy that you kind of get forced into when you don't trust how you can enter the zone. And the Stars didn't trust the way they could enter the zone. I think one of the things they were worried about was neutral zone turnovers, so they didn't take any risks that way. And you know, to tell you the truth, I think some of it was that maybe they just one of the things you find when you're exhausted is that you don't have quite the precision in your motor skills, and so you fumble the puck a little bit here and there, and there were signs of that all over the place. You weren't seeing precision passes. You were seeing pucks that you would usually see guys catch that would just bounce off sticks. And that's the sign of a team that is not running at 100%.
Yeah, and I think a good example of that, I believe it was with the empty net. I believe it was Mason Marchment. There was a sequence with about, I think it was 25, 30 seconds, something under, you know, under 40 seconds left. But there's a sequence where the puck fell to the left wing side and Marchment couldn't get a clean look off. And there was net to shoot at. And it speaks to that execution. I don't think you're wrong.
And I mean, I kind of look at all this, you know, the playoffs in general, it's a lot like inflation. You know, you can say 3 years in that the inflation rate is, you know, 2.5%. And so prices are fine. But if you had 10% inflation for the prior 2 years, what you have is a buildup of that 20% with the 2.5. It's like, yeah, it's down now, but you feel the cumulative effect of the whole thing. And that's what makes it painful.
So what could Edmonton, Dallas have done?
Well, I mean, it's not what Dallas could have done. I think Dallas, it's random, you know, backward guessing. Yeah, Dallas needed to be able to play 5D. Dallas 60. Might have, or 6D. Dallas might have brought in Maverick Bork a little earlier to try and get, you know, where they hurt on a lot of these things was they don't have a whole lot of playmakers. They have scorers, they have shooters. But not a whole lot of creative passers. And so that's one of the weaknesses. And it hurt them against Colorado, and it really hurt them against Edmonton. What they should have done was figure out a way to play the Kings and the Canucks instead of the it's like, I'm not going to second guess that. They played who they had to play. And I think the lesson that most people who just kind of randomly look at this are going to say, well, it's better to have superstars than it is to have depth. Absolutely the wrong take, because what this was a depth team that got beat up, and the superstars were able to take advantage of that. And it was still kind of a coin flip series.
And I will add one more thing to your list of things Dallas could have done about it. And it's been harped on, but without the game one collapse, right? The Colorado series is probably one game shorter, right? Without the slow start against Vegas, maybe that series is one game shorter. And at the time, you know, I remember going through the run, we were making jokes about Dallas. Yeah, we don't need to worry because Dallas always loses the first game. And it was funny, but I think your inflation comment makes sense. It's funny until you get to game six, you know, games 4, 5, and 6 of the Edmonton series. And all of a sudden Dallas has, you know, arguably 2 or 3 extra games that they probably didn't need to play because, you know, and some of this is, you're not going to bury a team like Colorado, but some of it is even against a team like Colorado, like you got to make a 3-0 lead stand up. You look back, and if you're talking about fatigue and on the margins, and yes, having a sixth defenseman that you're willing to play makes a difference. I think maybe being a little bit more aggressive with your rotations, especially before Foxa got hurt. And realistically, if you're the Stars, you have a couple of extra bodies, right? Maybe being a little extra aggressive with your rotation to keep some guys fresh. And then, you know, finally, like, yeah, not playing games you don't have to play is a pretty good way to play fewer games.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll take a larger view on this, and it's really, you know, there were a couple things that kind of doomed Dallas here. One of which was Joe Pavelski hit his curve, and there was absolutely no way that he was not going to play the role that he played in the playoffs.
Yep. And it dragged the line down.
It dragged the line that he was on down, and it was going to be that way. There's no way that's going to change. You can take a long-term effect and say Jim Neal probably deserves some blame here because he knew that he didn't have enough organizational depth at defense.
Yep.
And it was something that he tried to fix at the trade deadline by bringing in Tanev, and that was absolutely required to get him as far as they got.
I mean, God, but can you imagine this postseason without Tanev?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I think we saw it the last couple of games because Tanev was Tanev without being fully Tanev, and that made him a little more vulnerable. But you have a disconnect between the coach and the general manager on a player like Nils Lundqvist, where the GM has hope that he's going to be a player, and the coach refuses to play him during the regular season, which doesn't even get you to the point where you're trusting him in the postseason. And that leaves you with needing Yanni Hakanpaa, who's not there. So you bring in the AHL version of Yanni Hakanpaa, I think Alex Petrovic probably earned himself an NHL deal somewhere if he wants to go somewhere other than Texas for next year.
Yeah, if he wants to be a seven, I think he absolutely has proven that he can be a seven somewhere.
But on the other hand, that's an organizational disconnect that was allowed to fester, and it's probably something that shouldn't be allowed to fester for this next season. I think job one is to sign Tanev, but job three, after you decide what to do with Duchene, is taking a look at what you have organizationally within the defense. How much faith are you going to have in Leon Bixel coming up into the NHL? What that means for your depth in the organization in case you have injuries, because the Stars have been extremely healthy on the back end. You have to figure out what you're going to do with Ryan Suter. I think if Suter is okay getting bought out, he'll probably get bought out. But if he isn't, I see no reason to think that Neil's going to make that call. One more year of that Suter contract with him either on the third line or sitting out periodically is probably going to live with.
I mean, I think you're right on Suter. And we did see we finally saw, and again, he wasn't the reason they lost, but the stick drop goal. And I think it was the first goal in game four, when Dallas got up 2-0, and, you know, he tried to play the puck against Ottinger. We saw, again, my lionizing the defense, apparently, I think he took 2 horrible penalties in games 5 and 6. In game 5, he took a cross check on McDavid. That was just, it was just stupid.
And it was stupid, but you know what? If you saw the second angle from in front, I could see why people were complaining that it wasn't a good call. It was a little weak. If you saw it from behind, it looked pretty bad.
And I don't disagree, but But here's my counter.
You don't put yourself in that
player
situation.
A player with his experience, good call, bad call, whether he decked him, whether he didn't, a player with his experience needs to have the situational awareness to say, I don't need to do this. I gain nothing from doing this. And I run the risk of putting a team that we've got on the ropes on the power play with Connor McDavid. So I'm just not going to do it. Like it was a dumb thing to do. Whether or not he actually, it's one of those, he tried to cross check him. We can argue about how hard he hit him and whether McDavid went down easy and whether it was a reputation call and whether it was Knobloch work in the refs. Like all of those things are kind of garnishing on the situation. But the thing that you can't dispute is that he got his stick parallel and he extended his arms into somebody's back. And that's a dumb thing to do.
Yeah. If you go by the letter of the law, it was definitely a cross check. And even if you go just kind of on first impression, it was a cross check.
And it's a game situation, series situation. To that point, Dallas was in really good shape. You know, you're on the third pairing. You just don't take that. You know what I mean? You just don't take that risk.
Yeah. And here, I think Suter more than anybody probably got doomed by the usage with the 5D.
Yep.
I mean, for the first two series, he was a stalwart, getting 20 minutes a night as a third defender. I don't think you could have asked anything more out of Suter.
No,
I think it came back and bit him a little bit, and I think his legs went. And when your legs go, your brain doesn't quite. Your brain and your body are out of sync, and then you react in certain ways that are stupid.
You drop your stick, and instead of going to pursue the puck, or you know, instead of doing something to break up the situation, you turn and you go get your stick, and all of a sudden it's extended pressure. I will say this. And this might be a hot take. I don't know if we need to fire up the easy take oven. I actually don't think that the Dallas Stars should buy out Ryan Suter. They got one year left. I think he this year demonstrated a willingness to play on the third pairing. And to your point about, you know, Dallas is going to need organizational depth anyways. And unless there is a specific player, especially now that we know Pavelski's not coming back, if there is a specific player that you need his specific money to get, I think they save like $2.5 million against the cap if they buy him out. I think if you're the Stars, if you think Bixel's going to play, and knowing now that you have Pavelski gone, unless there's an actual plan, I would almost rather say, you know what? He can be in that 5-6-7 group, and you ride out one more year and you get out free and clear versus having to spread it out over two seasons. So I'd be fine if they kept him under the assumption that, you know, two or three guys come into the team.
Well, and you, what is it? You kind of have the big contract that you really have to worry about here is Harley, right? And so Harley's the RFA that you need to find out whether you're going to bridge him or whether you're going to sign him long term. But that's going to be a paycheck that they're going to have to sign.
And one that they will sign gladly, right?
Exactly. So that's a no-brainer. But other than that, you're probably not going over, you know, $1.25 million on any individual contract, whether it's an RFA or whatever. You have to sign a goaltender. You have a couple, you know, Sam Steele probably gets a contract, and deservedly so. I think he found a really nice niche there as a performer who can do a bunch of stuff as a fourth liner. Who else is out there? Delandria. Delandria is probably going to be on a show me type deal 1 year. Yep. Lundqvist.
And it's your point. I love that you brought this up during earlier, and the problem with him goes back into the regular season. I personally, you know, if you had the Wayback Machine, I think you find a way to see what he can be. But I have a very, very hard time thinking that he has a history with this or a future with this organization.
He doesn't seem to fit the bill. If you can't find a way for him to lock down on the defensive end, he's such an anomaly on the back end then that you're going to have a tough time finding a steady use for him.
And also you have a coach, and you know, I am a generally a Pete DeBoer fan. I'm a stan. I think he's done a fantastic job. The results are inarguable, but I really do, and I'll go to the wall with this one, and this isn't a Lundqvist is great argument, but I will say Peter DeBoer screwed up this season by, and Jim Nill did too, right? I'm going to share some blame across people that I love, but DeBoer and Nill screwed up this season when it came to Lundqvist, because either Pete DeBoer needed to figure out a role for this kid that could take, you know, 10 to 12 minutes of ice time off the plate. Like even Petrovic, this job that we're crowing about that he did was still what, you know, 14 minutes, you know, they screwed up in that they either needed to find a way for this kid to be at least a specialized player, or they needed to turf him, even at the risk of losing, you know, of losing him for nothing, right? They needed to turf him and replace him. But the fact that they went into the playoffs playing 4 minutes a night of Nils Lundqvist was just, even at the time, you know, this isn't us using the benefit of hindsight. I think you can go back to the tape. We were on this early, but it was dumb. It was a bad decision. It hurt the team, and it wasn't just a playoff thing. It was dumb all year.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a big fan of this organization.
Yes.
They do a lot of really good stuff. And so when there's 100%. A blind spot where it's dysfunctional, you have to call it out, because I'm pretty sure that Jim Nill would agree with that diagnosis.
And as well,
and we'll see what he does.
They're going to build a statue of the guy, I think. But, you know, he had the cachet. If he had wanted to, right, he had the organizational cachet to, you know, go to Gilardi, whoever, and say, you know what, I know we traded a first for this kid, it's not working, we're going to cut our losses. Or, you know, he certainly, maybe he tried. I don't know what that relationship. I don't even want to get into that side of things. Or, you know, go to the coach. There is something needed to happen, because the status quo was dumb and broken for many, many months. And either somebody needed to go to DeBoer and say, fine, 12 minutes. No, you know, this is not a request. Or they needed to get rid of the kid and do something else.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a manager of anything, you can't allow dysfunction to fester, because you're going to pay for it in the long run.
And
the
Stars ended up paying for this. And yeah. And to your point about fatigue, and, you know, everything was fine through two rounds, and all of a sudden Tanev takes a shot off his foot and can't finish a game that they lose. And all of a sudden the pair, you know, they put themselves in a position where they had zero margin of error, and then something bad happened.
Yeah. Now, you know, I'm you know, we've kind of beaten this to death, but I'm going to leave this on a positive note, which is I think what we discovered here with Haskinen and Lindell and Tanev, which I'm just going to assume that they sign, yep, and Harley is a top four that is the envy of the league.
Yeah, I think the other bit is you have to be cautiously optimistic about Bichel. You know, he ended up having a good AHL season, played in the playoffs in Europe, and then came back to the, you know, came back to the States. So I think there's some hope there. I do, to me, and this is very much in the same vein of the Nils Lundqvist and, you know, the arguments that we've had a gazillion times. I think that you're happy with that as a top four, but if ever there was an off season to say, we are getting Haskinen on his strong side, no matter what, it is this off season. Like if ever there was a time to say, this is ridiculous, he needs to play on his strong side, let's go, like, this is the season to solve that problem.
I'm not convinced. If we get a three-player rotation of Lundqvist, Bixel, and Suter as your 5-6-7 and kind of rotate through, I'm happy with this defense.
Oh, I'm happy
for the regular season. Jim Nill, I think, has kind of developed this plan where you set the regular season team and then you find where the hole is at the trade deadline. And you spend in order to plug that hole. And that may end up being a right D for next year as well. But I think that's a seven defensive rotation that gets you as a top one or top two teams in the Central for next year.
And I think as well, that is what his good GM's ship has earned, right? Because you don't have the glaring holes. You've got guys in Stankoven, Johnston, you know, Bork is going to be up there. You've got guys on good deals. You've got elite talent. You've got the flexibility. You don't have to go into the season with, you know, oh my God, what do we do to fix this? So I think you're right. That should be the strategy. That is the strategy. I wouldn't hate that top four either. I think it's fine. Again, this is just me nitpicking. But a world in which he could flip to his strong side, that makes me very happy.
Yeah,
I want to ask you about one other before. I know we're moving along. I do want to. The other big name to me that I think is one of the unfortunate shifts over the course of the postseason is, what do you do with Matt Duchene?
I mean, it depends on what he wants to do. If it's a team friendly deal, you do it. If it's not, you don't. And that's going to depend.
I love how you make it sound so. And you're right, by the way. This isn't me making funny. I love how you make it sound so simple. Like that is exactly the correct answer, right? But the way that you said it just makes me like, huh? Yeah, that is what you do.
Yeah, because I mean, Duchene is probably in a place where if he's your third line center, you're happy. And I think maybe next year you're going to see Bork up. So maybe Jamie Benn gets a Bork Stankoven partnership. You move Johnston up to the top line. I mean, I this kind of works. You have your top nine kind of set there. If you look at it that way, if you're assuming that your third line is Marchment, Duchene, and Sagan.
Because I think here's the thing we learned that I believe when the Hintz injury exposed us a little bit, as much as Duchene got the plaudits during the regular season for how well he played, I think we learned in the postseason exactly how important Tyler Seguin was to that line, because it really did seem like as soon as Seguin got moved off, Duchene started to struggle, and Seguin remained productive kind of wherever he was, right? He ended up with, what, 5 goals, 8 assists, 13 points in 19 games. That was fourth. I think it was Johnston, Robertson, Haskinen were the only guys on the team that had more goals than he did. So I think, you know, the argument, I guess, against it is Duchene really seemed to struggle when his comfort zone got disrupted, right? He seemed to do really well in a specific situation and not much at all outside of outside of game six against Colorado. I thought he had a pretty dire postseason, to be just brutally honest. So that to me is the only risk. But to your point, especially with Pavelski retiring, I think when you had to choose between the two of them, it was a little bit tougher, but you don't have to make that choice anymore. So I think it does come down to Duchene is going to have a much larger market than, I think, what is it, 3.2? Is that what he's made? Oh, sorry, $3 million flat, right? Yeah. If he wants another $3 million contract, I'm listening. If he wants much more than that, I really hope the Stars have the guts to walk away.
Yeah, and what, he's beginning of next season, he's going to be, he's 33?
Yep.
So, I mean, I could see him having, you know, if you do a reasonable, you know, 3-year deal,
I'd give him
a good number. Yeah. Yep. You know, you can make up for it a little bit with some length. So you, it depends on whether he likes Texas.
And I think the benefit is you've still got, you know, thinking about the way contracts get staggered, you won't have to worry about Logan Stankoven until 26, 27. I think that's the year you target. I think whatever you do with Matt Duchene, you have one more season of Jamie Benn, right? So you're going to get a big chunk back there. Foxa will be off the books. Dadonov will be off the books. You'll have to re-sign Wyatt Johnston, and that looks like it might be a monster. But you'll have one more year of Stankoven, and I think two more years of Bork. So you have the room. We've always talked about it. You can have a bad contract. You just can't have a lot of them, right? So if you're Stars,
and Suter comes off the books too.
Yeah, Suter comes off the books.
If you don't, I'm not convinced Lindell comes off the books, but you have to renegotiate what that deal is.
Yeah. But I just mean Lindell in 2025-26, I think you're right. Esa Lindell will still be a Dallas Star. I don't think he'll be making $5.8 million.
Yeah, I agree. David's not going to like that. But he's coming around on Esa Lindell.
I mean, he's good. I just don't think it'll be 5.8. That seems like a lot.
Yeah, it was the Klingberg contract.
Yep. So I do think Dallas has room. I think if Duchene is willing to sign 3 years, Dallas has room to do that without messing anything else up and being able to handle fixing the defense. It just, it comes down to the number. Again, my biggest concern with DeShane is he seems like he needs a really specific set of circumstances to be successful. And the concern I would have is, well, what if you need to shuffle? What if Hintz gets injured and Sagan goes to the top line, right? You're going to get good performance out of Sagan and you're not going to get anything out of DeShane. And that's a problem.
Yeah. Although I think it's less of a regular season problem than it is a season problem.
Yeah.
One of the things I thought I saw with DeShane was that he didn't deal very well with restricted time and space.
Yeah.
And so he wasn't able to do what he did during the regular season. But what we're talking about is really, you have the team that gets you to the playoffs, and then you have the team that gets you to the Stanley Cup. And if you view DeShane as a guy who's going to get you to the playoffs, I think he's an absolute fit. And then you just need to make sure that he has a role where at least try to contribute in a playoff situation. But it's all based on the number.
I do think it's interesting that you're already looking at Wyatt Johnston as a part of that first line, because I agree completely. I think he could be, to me, a Johnston, Hintz, Robertson trio could just be absolute thunder dynamite, right?
Yeah. And the other thing the team may want to start looking at is, regular season, if things are going well, get some of these guys a little rest, especially somebody like Roope Hintz.
Yeah.
If Hintz only played 60 games during the regular season, I'd be happy.
Because
The body abuse at that speed seems to accumulate. And so by playoff time, he's not fully healthy.
I mean, think about the playoff Sagan just had, right? I obviously would prefer it not to be related to an injury, but I think it was pretty evident that Tyler Sagan had an extra gear once we clicked into the postseason that some of his peers didn't seem to have.
Yeah. And so some of this may be, if you're confident enough with your team that you can that you can trust taking guys out of the lineup with maintenance days, and so your 13th forward and your 14th forward are guys that can roll in there, and you're confident that they're going to give you the 10 to 12 minutes, and you're also confident you have somebody like Sam Steele who can play up the lineup and still allow you to win during the regular season, then I think that's a recipe for success.
I also think it's interesting that the other thing I think is really the Tampa Bay model, and that this postseason was a really good learning episode, and that like it's nice to have the banner, but you don't need to win a division. You don't need to win a conference in today's NHL. Right. It's a win and get in league. So I wonder if maybe next season, to your point about, resting some guys and taking that approach, I wonder if a part of the solution as well is, if they finish first in the division, awesome. If it's second in the division, third in the division, who cares?
Yeah, I don't think the team that I'm seeing, and this team is going to look next year is going to look a lot like this year's team. With a few upgrades and maybe an extra forward, because I don't think we're going to have quite the cap management issues that we've had the last couple of years. But this team should be very comfortable that they can make the playoffs and beat a team in the first round, no matter who they're playing.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't see them falling to fourth. I really don't even see them falling to third. But this is a team that. Make the playoffs, see what it looks like, and then go from there. But hit it rested as opposed to just fighting. You don't need five or six Ironmen out there playing an entire 82 game.
I agree. So we're gonna get into a lot more over the course of the offseason. We talked mostly about Edmonton today. We're gonna get into the playoffs as a whole, the season as a whole. We're gonna get into positional groups, free agency, all of the things. We're not gonna take the offseason off. Mark, but any closing thoughts, anything you want to get off your chest before we wrap up?
Yeah, just a few things. One, it's been a really interesting media year, the Dallas Stars. You no longer have full-time coverage from The Athletic. You don't have full-time coverage from the Dallas Morning News. I think the Dallas Morning News has done a great job. I think they've stepped up with their coverage there. A little different with high school football when she's covering yep. that. But once that distraction was gone, and I can say that because I'm in California, so I'm not married to high school football in Texas. But once that was gone, she was just bang up and writing great stuff. I also thought that there were a bunch of places where people stepped up where you don't have traditional coverage of the Stars, but people like Sean Shapiro, Robert Tiffin, David Castillo, there's just some quality stuff out there that doesn't fit the normal model that you would see in another NHL city. But the fact of the matter is, I think the coverage for this team is really good. You have some fabulous people who are independently out there doing some great journalism for this team. And I think that should be noted, because there's always this talk that nobody's covering the Stars. Well, people are covering the Stars. And if you're a Dallas Stars fan, you have multiple places where you can go to get high level journalism.
I love that. Yeah. Get plugged in is the answer. There's amazing coverage. It's not easy. Yep. We don't have the luxury.
E-Magazine's doing great. Yep.
Yeah. But Castillo, Shapiro, Spits and Suds is a great podcast. Yep. Shout out there. Yeah. I think.
And Heike does great stuff. Yep. You know, the Podman Rush podcast, love listening to it. Oh, we have some of the best broadcasters in the business. So media is great for this team.
We're spoiled. And again, this is also one of those, the thing that I will say, my closing thoughts are, be excited at the fact that we're disappointed, right? This is not a Stars team that was on its last legs. One more kick of the can. Let's just see what we can do. This is a Stars team whose best player in the postseason is 21 years old, whose arguably second best player is 22 years. You know, this is a team that, yes, you know, Ben and Sagan get a lot of press and kind of the older, so, you know, Pavelski, the like, but this is a team that by and large is driven by guys that are they're either approaching or just in their primes. This is a team that has some of its best assets. Bichel and Bork didn't even contribute really meaningfully, right? This is a team that is on the go, not a team that is trying to find ways to stay relevant. So, you know, we have a general manager who has done an excellent job. We have a coach who I think is five of the last 6 years has made a conference final. We've got proven performers. We've got guys with upside, everything you could want on the roster. So this is a time to savor the fact that as a fan base, we are in a point where we're disappointed at the fact that they've lost in a second consecutive Western Conference final. And I think the next year's Stars will likely be better than this year's Stars. And that's a pretty fun thing to think about. All right. Well, we will talk again soon. KT, thank you for putting this together. Mark, as always, thank you for your insights and your counterpoints. Thank you all for listening, downloading, doing all of the things. Please keep in touch with us over the course of the summer. It's going to be a fun one. It's going to be an exciting one. I can't wait till the puck drops next season. This has been Stargazing, presented by Bet Online. Season over.
NetCredit is here to say yes, because you're more than a credit score. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone. Solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
Feel the pulse of the city. Feel the beat of the drum. Feel the bass blow your hair. In Las Vegas, live music delivers much more than sound. It's where music comes alive. With artists like Megan Thee Stallion, Maroon 5, Carrie Underwood, Shania Twain, Babyface, Lionel Richie, and many more. Every show is a playground for your senses. See the full summer lineup at visitlasvegas.com.
Hey, go-getters. Let Noom Sport Hydration Tablets power up your fun and keep you ready to move. Simply drop, dissolve, and enjoy crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade or lemon lime. with 5 essential electrolytes and crafted with clean, non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free ingredients, Noom should be your go-to hydration choice. Because when you're hydrated, you can do more, go further, and recover quicker. Shop now on noonlife.com and get ready for endless fun, because anything can happen after noon.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.